Good evening, listeners and viewers, and welcome to the Water Zone Radio Show, where tonight and every week we're live from the NBC News Radio Broadcasting Studios of KCAA 1050 AM, Talk 102.3 FM, and Express 106.5 FM. We're located right here in beautiful, sunny, and warm Southern California, and also simultaneously broadcast on Turfs Up Radio, in courtesy from Fort Lauderdale at turfsupradio.com. Please visit their website. So thanks for tuning into the Water Zone tonight, everybody. We have a great show tonight. I'm your host, Chris Davey. For those of you who are listening for Rob Starr's voice, you won't hear it tonight. He's off at home doing a home project. So he'll be back next week and right next to me here on the mic. But don't worry, we have a great show. We've got actually three guests tuned in tonight. So we've got some exciting discussions coming your way. The first is a visitor from Florida. Her name is Rachel, and she manages one of the Site One stores out of northern Florida in Jacksonville, Florida. The second one, we've got our weekly Chris Austin from Maven's Notebook. So she'll be on in a minute here just to give us the lowdown on California water news. And on the second half of the show, we have a gentleman by the name of Doug Pouchard. He's the president of coolwater.org and also Harvest HTO. So, hey, guys, we got a full show for you. So let's start with a quick question for Rachel. And Rachel, why don't you introduce yourself? Welcome to the show, by the way. And
well, thank you guys so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Awesome. So why don't you, so you manage the Site One store, right?
I do.
And you are a transplant from California.
I am.
And you were a visitor today at Toro, our place of work. So
wonderful time.
So awesome. Glad you enjoyed that. So can you give us kind of like, what's the difference between, what difference did you experience between moving from California to Florida? What's it like?
It's a different kind of hot out there for sure. no, it's great. It's different everywhere. I mean, you have so much more humidity. You have a much longer, warmer period of summer. So spring, summer, fall. It's just hot all the time.
Yeah, and you have and so what about the business side of it, right? The Site One business, is it different? Do you have different customers? Different. I mean, do you sell the same sort of stuff that you sold here?
The irrigation side is really the same, but the chemical and agronomic side is always a little different. They have a lot more variety out there as far as pest control goes and fertilizations and fungicides and stuff like that. They have a lot more because the environment's so wet.
Chemicals a bigger part of the business than
huge. It's
than
huge
hardware.
Out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, than sprinklers and stuff like that.
Yep, irrigation here is almost needed, but with the amount of rain that people get in Florida, sometimes it's half. Well, more than half. There is a lot more customers out there that don't have an irrigation system
anymore.
Don't
need it.
Don't need it.
Well, let's bring in Chris Austin because I know we want to get some California water news, but I know Chris might have a question for you too because she's interested in the fact that that you're from Florida and work out there. Chris, welcome.
Oh, now you're putting me on the spot there, well, Chris.
I mean, there's a lot going on out there in Florida, right? So,
there's a lot. And don't get me started on Florida, because we're supposed to be talking about California. And, boy, it's been active. It's been an active week in California water. We could talk about a number of things. We could talk about the legislature passing SB1, yep, sort of the Trump insurance bill that the governor says he will veto. We could also talk about Trump's threat that he made to San Francisco that the EPA was going to issue them a violation because he perceives that they have a lot of trash flowing out to the sea, including needles. And as usual, he gave no evidence of that. And, nobody that I've never heard of that, put it that way. He's very focused on that. And then today, there was this memo that came out that sort of indicates that the federal water agency in the Delta isn't going to give up as much water to help meet water quality standards in the Delta as they have in the past. So, there's a lot going on.
Didn't I read somewhere in there, too, that I've read something about, the Trump the administration under Trump threatening jail time for California officials over the river project.
And I forgot about that.
Don't forget that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you, there's a lot going on. Yes, the Trump administration threatened officials if they go forward with a plan that they've been working on, that I believe they're the biological opinions, which are the, you know, what the federal fish agencies weigh in on for all these water projects. They have sort of specified that this project takes place. And the project is to place, they're trying to reestablish winter run salmon up above Shasta Dam, because with climate change, water in the river below Shasta Dam, they just can't keep it cold enough, and salmon need cold water to spawn.
Right.
And Shasta Dam, you can't build a fish ladder there. It's just too big.
Too big.
So they want to put salmon up on the McLeod River. And this is really a very complicated project. It requires, like, they'll go up and they'll place the, you know, get the salmon to spawn in the river there, right? And then when the fish are juvenile, they have to, they've designed this sort of trap to catch them as they come down the river before they go into the reservoir, because they have to get them, like, over the reservoir because to become salmon, they got to go upstream. If they don't go out to sea, then they still become fish, but I actually think they become more trout-like, but not salmon-like, because they're not out in the ocean. So, I'm not supposed to really have many opinions, or not supposed to have opinions on this sort of thing, but this sounds to me like it's kind of really expensive, and I'm not sure how it's going to work. But you know, they've been working on this project in the, you know, the Northwest, in Oregon and Washington, and you know, how do you get this? And then you have to get the salmon up to the river when they come back, right?
Yeah.
So they actually have a thing called the salmon cannon.
Salmon cannon.
Literally.
I was going to ask you, how do they do that?
That literally will shoot the salmon over the top of the dam. Yes, I'm like in a big water cannon, whoosh the salmon.
It's like a three ring circus here, man. We need a big top. Some music, yeah. A big top. Get a couple elephants. We got a circus.
I mean, I can't believe this, but they have actually invented this thing. So, you know, I don't know. This seems to me, I don't know. But if the salmon need to be up where the colder water is, otherwise they're not going to survive. Is this the answer? I don't know. But this is what interestingly enough, this is what the state has been mandated to do. And so they want to start on this project, and the Trump administration is saying no and threatening jail time, which, you know, this is new. We haven't had jail time. So, you know, a lot of fun with that.
Yeah, that was, you know, when I read that, I had to go back and take a second take. You know, I'm like, did I read that right? And so, yeah, that's what it said.
It's stunning, kind of, you know, some of these things that go on. You kind of scratch your head. You know, the remarks to San Francisco, you know, San Francisco in the Bay Area, they've actually been very active on trying to keep trash out of the bay and out of the ocean. You know, they're actually quite conscious of this.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting to see him make such a threat, especially with no evidence, you know. I have been following water issues for, you know, what, 12 years now.
Right.
I have never heard people screaming about needles going into the ocean, and believe me, people would. You know, so.
Right. I know.
Anyways.
Yeah, I know. I know from the standpoint, from the standpoint of the environmental guys out there, right? I mean, if something like that would happen, they would be front and center, raising flags, hiring brass bands, and really making a stink over it. So.
Well, and also too, you know, I came from working in private business to, you know, going in and sitting in on these public meetings. And one thing that I don't think regular people understand, but it is a theme that I hear a lot in these public meetings, and that is public safety. These right. agencies that have a mandate for public safety, this is in their top of mind. It's in their discussion. It's in their presentations. And sometimes they're doing things that, you know, regular people may perceive as sort of obstruction to what they want to do, or, you know, they don't like it. But agencies have this that have this public safety mission. They take it very seriously.
Sure.
And, you know, I am sure that if there were needles flowing into the ocean, I don't think that's happening.
No.
Really don't. Especially
or at least
in San
on a large
Francisco,
scale, yeah.
You know.
Right.
Because they're very conscious and they've worked for years on this.
Sure. So what?
But hey, while we have a few minutes left,
sure,
we
yeah.
could talk about SB1.
Right. I was just going to say, what else is getting a lot of chatter out there?
Oh, yes.
SB1.
You know, this is the bill that aims to cement in all of the regulatory things that were in place when Trump took office. And this is not just water, but worker protection and other environmental protections. He's already rolled back the Clean Water Act, but it's my understanding that the state passed the much tougher regulations that kind of are controlling that, so the federal rollback isn't that as dramatic as some people might make it. But there are other things that are going on. And there are some provisions there specifically to water where the people that want, the environmentalists that want to see these protections in place say that, you know, they're necessary and they're flexible enough to allow the voluntary agreement process to continue. And the people that are against it say, no, it's going to, which is the water agencies and the farmers.
Sure.
And they say, no, it's going to, you know, really disrupt the process. And so both sides are clamoring, you know, yes, veto, you know, no, sign the bill.
Both got their opinions and their stakes in the ground, right? So...
Yeah. And, you know, what I haven't been able to find out is, you know, is there the possibility of a legislature to override that? I can't recall that happening in California history. And people said, well, they don't have they wouldn't have the 2/3 vote necessarily to do that. But I don't think there is a way to override it in California in the Constitution, but I could be wrong. So I'm speculating. So I probably shouldn't be saying that, but you know,
if there's a way, somebody will find it.
Yeah. But meanwhile, we're all waiting to see, you know, what he decides to do. He said he'll veto it. I have not heard otherwise, but I haven't seen him come through and actually, you know, solidly veto it yet. But when that happens, you will know. Maven's Notebook readers and subscribers will get the notice. So
right.
Waiting.
Yep, I got I'll tell you, reading Maven's Notebooks today, and for you folks out there, you'll be sure to go to mavensnotebook.com, get the latest information. But I read a little part that said that intrigued me, coastline protection, I think, I think it was... you want to prevent California's Katrina? Grow a marsh. So I thought that was a great byline.
Yeah. I mean, it really speaks speaks about, you know, we have with sea levels rising, the way really to protect things is to have that marshy area, that, you know, a place for the water to go.
Right.
Rather than, you know, just trying to armor the coast, as, you know, some people want to do.
Yeah.
They're actually really trying this in the Bay Area. They're trying to find places where the sea can come, you know, will be able to, the water's going to come. So they're building marshes and, you know, trying to make a place for the water and the habitat to move up. It's a very highly developed watershed, so it's, you know, it's a challenge. But the Bay Area did pass a measure AA, a couple years ago, that provided funding. The voters in the Bay Area agreed to tax themselves to, you know, provide more tidal marsh restoration projects. So, you know, there's a lot of that going on in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Right. Well, our other guest here certainly knows about sea level rise from where you're at. I mean, you're a mile in from the coast and about 5 foot of elevation.
Yep. That's about it. Without our marsh and without the retention ponds that we have there, we would easily be seeing a lot more ocean water reaching us within moments, especially after, you know, Dorian that we just had and a couple more that are out there that are floating around. We're definitely reliant on those marsh areas to take a lot of that hit before it reaches us.
Well, you know, and that's what kind of, you know, doomed New Orleans is, you know, the loss of the marsh. And it, you know, in the Gulf of Mexico, especially in the Louisiana area, their big issue is land loss, because the dams that block, you know, on the Mississippi River are blocking the sediment. And so they're losing land. It's actually moving inland. And if it isn't stopped, Houston's going to be waterfront in, you know, 20 years. It's actually happening. They're losing land. I think it's like, you know, I can't guess at the amount, but it's,
yeah. It's like a football field's worth a day or something like that, I remember somebody saying, right?
Yeah, it's like pretty like jaw-dropping if you really think about it. Yep. And they're really trying to figure out how to get more sediment down there to stop it, and that's their big issue. As big as our Bay Delta challenge is, it's land loss in the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah. All right, Chris, well, we hear the music coming up there. So once again, thanks this week for your thoughtful insight and perspective on California water news, and a little shift for you over to Florida this week. Chris, I wish you a great week, and we'll talk to you next time. And for the rest of our listeners out there, guys, stay tuned for Doug Pouchard right after the commercial break here. Stay with us, everyone.
Good evening.
Thank you.
KCAA Loma Linda, 1050 AM, K292 FQ Riverside, and K293 CF Moreno Valley.
If you knew there was a pipe cement that works better than the one you're currently using, is better for you and the environment, and costs the same or less, would you buy it? Well, no-brainer, right? Weldon, the trusted leader in solvent cements for over 60 years, is pleased to introduce a new line of solvent cements that does all that. Introducing the Eco Series line of solvent cements for PVC piping systems. Not only does it work great and set fast, it also has 30% lower solvent emissions and less smelly fumes, a better workplace environment when you're installing pipes. But don't just take our word for it. Eco Series products are the only solvent cements that are Green Seal certified for environmental innovation for effective performance, improved working conditions, and for use with potable water. Now available in a medium-bodied fast-setting blue formula, 905 Eco, and a regular-bodied fast-setting clear formula, 900 Eco. Pick up a can today from your local distributor and see, smell, and feel the difference, just like Joe Sweat, president of Sunrise Irrigation, did. He said, after using Weldon's 905 Eco, we immediately noticed the application was smooth and there was noticeably less odor than other blue solvent cements on the market. The guys love it. To learn more about Eco Solvent Cements from Weldon, visit the website at www.weldon.com or call the technical service hotline at 877-477-8327. That's 877-477-8327.
love you, love you not. They love you. Satisfying your customers, it's a full-time job. Want an easy way to make them happy? Try having your ornamentals delivered straight to the job site with Nursery Direct. Could save you and your clients a pretty penny. Think about it. Instead of driving to the nearest nursery, picking up the order, and then driving to the job site, the crew's able to begin work right away. That cuts time and labor. Savings you can pass on to your customers. And you can get your plants delivered direct, even if you don't have a nursery branch in your area. Here's another quick tip. Keep a substitutions list on standby for every project, so your team knows what to do in case a plant isn't in stock. Because there's nothing customers appreciate more than a project that finishes on time and on budget. They love you. They really love you. Aww.
Okay, I'm here today in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and I'm with a gentleman named Doug Pouchart. And Doug is the founder of a company called Cool Water, which is a nonprofit. He'll tell us what that is in a minute. And then he has another company, which is a profit. You see, he needs to make money and eat, and that's called Harvest H2O. So, Doug, welcome to the Water Zone today.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here. This is our third annual Water Summit, and it's always exciting to see all these great people from around the water industry in my hometown of Santa Fe.
And this is called the Next Generation Water Summit, just so everybody knows. So tell me, before we get into the summit and everything, tell me what Cool Water does, and then tell me about the Harvest H2O.
Harvest H2O started about 15 years ago. I was in my house. I was in the tech business before moving into the water business. I lived in Austin, and I picked up the Austin Statesman, as I do Sunday morning, and the water rates were going to raise 8% a year for the next decade. I took out my little calculator and said, this is not going to be good. My irrigation bill is now going to be higher than my electrical bill. I've been looking for something to move into. I think it's water.
And so how did you pick, that was the reason you picked the water, more than energy or anything else? And because you know it's never going to go down.
No.
The price is never going to go down.
Never going to go down. So I got into water harvesting, rainwater harvesting, being in Austin. Austin was sort of the rebirth place of rainwater harvesting over the last couple decades. And I decided I wanted to move to Santa Fe, and so stayed in the rainwater harvesting business, was on the board of the American Rainwater Catchment Systems Association, and expanded into gray water, expanded into black water, expanded basically everything water to help my clients save water, conserve water.
And to clarify, black water isn't that private security company that goes out to kill people.
No, this is actually, it's interesting, in a lot of the states here in the West, we can actually use black water. New Mexico is one of the states where we can get permits and use it for subsurface irrigation, and a lot of clients do. In fact, one of my clients is here.
So here is the Next Generation Water Summit. Tell me a little about how that got started and how much was that the one that you kicked off? Or?
Yes, Next Generation Water Summit was about trying to push the industry in a little way in water reuse and starting to think about it, and that's why the Next Generation is in the title, of how we move water conservation from just thinking about potable water conservation to looking at it from a rainwater, a gray water, a black water, water reuse, water recycling, not at the utility perspective, but at the community level. And that's really what this conference summit workshop is all about, is bringing those people together, southwestern communities, to help push our thinking and share ideas and hopefully grow the next generation of water professionals.
Yeah, I think, you know, coming here today and listening to some of the speeches, one by Dr. White and the other by Dr. Overpeck, to me it's the education, because people don't understand. They hear a lot of political things and see the little short sound bites, but they really don't get into the details of really what's happening. And I think something like this is really good because it brings out people who totally understand it and teach it, but it also brings out technology people, and it brings public people, and it brings utilities and everybody else. So they get to learn really what's going on. And I really think it's going to be more of a grassroots. You know, one of the questions they asked this morning, Dr. Overbeck, you know, what would the next, whoever the next president is going to be, what should they do in this country? What's it going to take? Yes, there's climate change. I know people agree or disagree with the current president on climate change, but we all know, and I'm sure he knows too, there is climate change. I mean, thousands, 100,000 years ago, we didn't have cement roads and buildings and all this other stuff. There's more people here. Yeah, there were dinosaurs. I don't know if the dinosaurs combined equal what we have today with cars and everything else. I don't think so. But they did cause an issue. But I really believe that people need to understand, and they need to bring together a group of technologists and people of concern to understand what's happening and explain it in common sense. Not the scary thing, you know, that we all heard from Al Gore, that in 12 or years ago, you know, if you don't do this, it's going to go bad, or Alexandra Ocasio, I forget her last name, that they call AOC. You know, we only got 12 years to live. Those tactics aren't going to work.
Right.
They're just, the political aspect's got to be taken away. Just like in California, they worry about your ear-old pipes that are breaking. And when LA told everybody during our drought, oh, we're gonna use the water certain times that you can only use it. Well, they did. And the pressure wasn't balanced and it blew. And now we're digging up streets galore. That has to stop. Without water, we all die. Nothing can grow. No businesses can expand. No hospitals, nothing. We have to look at what we have to do to take care of the business.
Water doesn't fit exactly that model, as you know,
right?
Because we've treated water as silos. We have potable water.
Yep.
We've got water reuse people. We've got the operations people that maintain our pipes,
right,
are usually not in the same staff meeting as either one of those other people we talked about. The water conservation people, they're probably in a total different department. Then we talk about electricity generation and moving products. All those things take water.
Yes.
Growing crops so we can eat all take water. One of my favorite stories here, I teach water conservation classes at the community college, is showing coming down through southern Colorado into New Mexico, all the hay trucks. That is actually water being exported from Colorado into New Mexico. New Mexico is the fifth largest cheese state in the country. Hmm. And it's not northern New Mexico that makes the cheese, it's southern New Mexico. If you open up U.S. Drought Monitor, you'll see that the southern part of the state has actually been in a drought for 20 years.
Right.
So it's a little hairball, if you will. You can sort of, we can solve one problem, low flush toilets, and push them down to 0.8. We can solve another problem, your illustration of the water pipes and the pressure. That's really what water is all about. It has to be a little bit more integrated approach, mm-hmm, to thinking about it and planning about it. And yes, there's some social engineering that we need to think about and get our head around. And those are, you know, because we should be migrating crops to the right place.
Mm-hmm.
Texas, big rice, you know, area. And you're thinking about rice in southern Texas? Yes.
And we have big in California rice, with the Rice Commission.
Right. So, I mean, we need to start thinking about, you know, what are we going to transition? How do we transition to less water-intensive crops where we don't have the water, or where the temperature is going to rise because we don't want to be piping water and having it evaporate in reservoirs because the temperature is rising? So we have to start forward thinking a little bit about some of these problems, and there are going to be some simple solutions. We were just in a session in the Energy Water Nexus, and we were talking what's happened over the last, since 1995, our water production has gone down, and that's because of millions and millions of little things that happened. It wasn't this big law that got passed in Washington or a big law that got passed in California, because this is a nationwide phenomena where water production has gone down and population has continued to grow. It's literally all of us doing something that is actually driving down our water need.
You're right. That discussion has to include all these other people that you had mentioned. You know, I know more about California since I lived there than anything else, but you know, I didn't realize that California supplies alfalfa to the UAE. Why? Because the UAE companies come here and buy up a lot of land, not here, but California buy up a lot of land so they can produce the alfalfa to send to the Middle East. We have a state senator who wants to do away with all agriculture in California. Now he's going to the other extreme.
Yes.
Economically, it will kill us because we're the sixth largest, you know, money-making thing as a state versus a country in the world. There has to be a way of bringing people together to look at this whole thing and put a master plan together, as not only as a city, a county, a state, but the federal. How are we going to handle it? You know, I look at Israel. Look what they've done. People treat water a whole lot differently than they do here in this country.
They have done a great, great job. In fact, a lot of the technology, as you know, comes from Israel because of their drought condition. But they have one thing that we don't have that really puts them in a unique position. They own the water.
Yes.
We in the United States, of course, we have tens of thousands of agencies that manage and touch
public and private
water,
big and small.
And we have no federal agency, not one. You start listing almost all the federal agencies touch water in some way.
Correct.
And we have no water czar. There's nobody that is in that position. The EPA is supposed to, you know, by mandate, look at clean water and environmental situations. What does water conservation have to do with, you know, clean water? I mean, I love the WaterSense program, but you sort of look at that. Then we've got the Department of Energy as in water conservation as well.
Yes.
Of course, then you've got Bureau of Land Reclamation as in USBR, water management.
Right.
You know, it's like goes across the board. And that's, you know, one of our problems here is we don't have a head to this beast. And until we don't have to pass lots of laws, but we do have to start thinking about water as a natural resource. And also, in my opinion, a security issue. It is a security issue because water, as you mentioned, without it, we're not going to be here long.
Yep.
We could live with a few cloudy days, and our solar panels may not generate electricity, but we start losing water, we start hurting people in hours.
Yep. You know, people don't realize, it's like you go, I always use this on my show, but it's like going to the gas station and filling up your car, your tank. You stand there with the nozzle in the thing, and you watch the thing go cling, ding, ding, and you can see exactly how many gallons and how much it's going to cost. For the average homeowner, typically, they don't know how much water they use until they get their water bill. So they don't get it real time. Now, we heard a lot of people today that make real time devices that you can actually monitor. A lot of water agencies are allowing now, have a software system where they can go in every day and see how much water they use. I truly believe that smart connected products will help drive sustainability. And part of what I did this morning is for the people to see how they can change, they can adapt, which they didn't do fast. But also it's a security of how all of that's going to go. You know, they say it's going to go to the Internet of Things. Well, how much do we know about the Internet of Things? It's just like the dark web. Do you know how to get to the dark web? I don't. I'm curious about it. I mean, I read about it, but how do you get there? What can you find there? I don't know. I'd like to know that. And with all these things with smart controllers for irrigation, that they can get into Wi-Fi and hook into your computer, or you see these things on AT&T on the commercials where the father's sitting at his cabin, the son's late. Oh, I'm just leaving now. Oh, did you lock up the house? Yeah. And the guy goes, no, he didn't. He presses the button to lock. It's all going to happen to that. But people don't trust that yet. And I'll give you one quickie example, and maybe you can comment on it. There was a story that happened, again, in California, because that's where I live, and I hear the news there. Guy comes home one night, and his wife's home, and she says, hey, honey. She says, how come you forgot to lock the door this morning? He says, no, I locked it. She says, are you sure? Because it was open. Well, maybe I didn't. I was in a hurry. She says, and by the way, why did you change the radio station? She says, what? She says, we don't listen to that kind of music, and their kids are not here anymore. It's just you and me, so how come it changed? I don't know. They thought something screwed up. They didn't worry about it. A couple of days later, the same thing happened. The wife comes home. The front door is unlocked. The radio is to a different radio station. Now they're getting really worried about it. So then they started playing back their answering machine. And their answering machine rang in the house, and after three rings, it picks up, "Hi, thanks for calling, blah, 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 blah." Leave a message. It says, "Alexa, turn off the alarm system to the front door. Change the radio." Somebody was calling in, and they were getting robbed from that. So the trust, when that has to all happen to the cloud, to all of this stuff, if you can break in, or some, a 12-year-old can break into the Defense Department, what's going to happen when they get into your computers and see your bank accounts and all your credit cards? That's a scary thing. And that's, and it's just like this water, this, it relates to the water, because you need to get all those people together to make a grand plan for security. Because if they hit, if we get killed by somebody coming in and deactivating our electrical grid, or do something to the water, we're in trouble. Serious trouble.
I agree. The security is an issue. I think, as I mentioned, I think water is one of our issues we don't think about from a national homeland security. Yes, we are protecting our watersheds. We're doing that. But as far as the infrastructure we have in place, we're clearly not doing enough in that. But I think, again, it goes back to we've disabled our government in some respect and started trusting private industry. And private industry has a motive to earn a profit.
Sure.
That's, you know, what they're in business for. And the whole idea of the government helping supervise that environment to make sure we have some level ground rules that everybody plays by, but also some adult supervision looking at it and making sure that, you know, banks aren't, you know, releasing private information when they shouldn't be, that the water agencies actually have security systems on our billing systems, right, and our databases. Those are things that, you know, really the government's role is to help us. Some water agencies, I'm sure, do a great job. Mm-hmm. Most water agencies, they are single person, you know, maybe two or three people. You know, so you know that those are vulnerable because, right, they are out there digging up pipes and laying, you know, fixing leaks and fixing meters. And some of our small agencies here in New Mexico, and we have thousands, are one person. Yeah. You know, they are a one-person shop. So you know there's no real IT security there.
Well, even beyond that, in California, in Central California, there's a ton of people who can't get clean water at all. So our governor is asking the bigger agencies to take it over and spend all that money, because they're out, these people are out in the boonies. Yeah. It's going to cost gazillions of dollars to go build an infrastructure so they can get clean water. And what amazes me, in a country as wealthy and rich as we are, and as intelligent with technology, why can't we give everybody, I don't care if they're legal, illegal, whatever, they're human beings, how do we provide clean water to them so these kids or older people can get that? There's so much. I agree with your point, and it really needs to happen. It's like, I'm going to give you a notes to music, and I'm going to give it to five other people, and you come back with the same song. You don't. And that's what we really need to do. I don't know why we're not. And it bothers me in the sense that something bad can happen. I mean, we all think we're you know, nothing can happen. You know, 9/11 happened. We thought we were pretty protective of that. It says, you know, yes, you have protections at the water agencies, but you worry about a big airplane flying over or doing something. It's just, you can take a little radio-controlled plane, put Seraphim in it, fly it over, crash it into the reservoir, and now you got contaminated water, and it's not detected. So what do we do? And with all the broken pipes and we can't get water, there's a company called the Water Train. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
No, I've never heard of them.
A guy started this a couple of years ago. He, at the time, he bought 132 rail tanker cars, and he's moving water all over the country. Just like I said this morning, we build pipelines for oil. Why can't we build pipelines for water to bring it out? I mean, there's a lot in the East Coast when it snows, and where's it all go? And same thing when they got to let Shasta Dam dump it all in the bay. Why can't we take it or pipe it somewhere? I don't understand that. We have money for all kinds of crazy things, but the things to keep us safe and alive and healthy and grow, I don't see that, the protection. That's just me.
No, I think a lot of people share your concern, and it goes back to, I think we sort of ebb and flow. on, you know, how we manage society.
Well, if you were the czar, because I like your style, I'm gonna dub you czar, promote you. I'm gonna nominate you. I'll send a note.
We were talking about my last name previously, weren't we?
Yes. So let's say you're the man. Okay. What would you do first? What needs to be done first?
Well, of course, the first thing, we do have to have a head. And so even if it's not combining agencies, which I don't think would be where you'd want to start, it would be, you know, figuring out how to make this system more efficient that we have, and then looking at it from a security standpoint and trying to streamline the processes that you'd have between organizations before you'd, you know, sort of change anything. And then, of course, becomes the hard part, prioritizing.
Yep.
You know, create the list of what are the top things we should be looking at.
And then the participation is going to be hard.
Right. But that's actually not so hard. I found, like this meeting, we have builders and architects here. You know, when we first started this gathering, people said, oh, builders and architects won't come. That's not true. They come because they do care. So I found in most of these gatherings that not just this meeting, but in my previous careers, that you get the people together. They really know that there is an issue and they want to participate. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, you have turf issues that you have to deal with, but that's a secondary issue that most people can get over, especially knowing that if there's a head, you know, that's actually got some authority and can make some changes. At that point in time, most of those political really non-issues sort of evaporate, because people really, my belief and my experience, most people really want to help solve problems.
Sure. I think we believe as a company, turf is a good thing. It just, it does.
That's
a lot.
That's a different type of turf.
Well, yeah. No, but turf does a lot for cleaning the air and all this other stuff, and creates oxygen and such. I think there's places where turf doesn't belong, like in medians, in the streets and things like that. You know, people got real hung up on or really like the fact of artificial turf. Yet you lay artificial turf next to real turf, it's much more hotter. Mm-hmm. There's reports from the American Medical Journal that in some cases it looks like it causes some cancer because of the mold and mildew that it creates. So you come out with something new, and so there's always those things that are going to block or change. But I do agree with you. I think it's important to put a plan together, and then maybe, you know, go down the next step and get representatives from each of those to modify that plan, review the plan, and see what makes sense.
Right.
And target this country to go on the path, because it's going to happen. I mean, nobody can say we don't create more CO2 emissions or we don't generate more heat. That's not true. We all do. We know that. We
right.
never had skyscrapers and roads and trucks and cars. It's here now. It's
right.
going to get worse later.
Right.
How much? I don't know. But it's not going to get better unless we try to help. The same water that we're drinking in that iced tea and my water, it's been here for hundreds of thousands of years, just
right.
recycled back and back and
right.
back. And there isn't going to be any more. It's what it is what it is. We have a limited quantity of it. And, you know, whether it's going to more desal, which now they're doing inland desal, which is important for aquifers and stuff like that. I think there has to be a need to have more presence for that, more awareness for that. And things, what you're doing here, I think, are excellent, because you're bringing the variety of people and knowledge here to share their experiences and share their, you know, what do they need, what do we need to do? Those questions should never be stopped. Everybody should have a chance to speak. And I think part of that is going back to what Dr. White said with the communication and the education. That's got to be the biggest thing, the outreach, so everybody understands what it is. If we don't do that, it's just never going to get fixed. People are just going to argue against it and think it's just a political thing and be the end of it, though. You know, it's not real. They're just saying it, blah, 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 blah. And that's not true. We know that.
Right.
But the majority of people don't know that.
Well, and one of the things we've done here in Santa Fe is we've done community workshops over the last 2 months, involved throughout the city, different geographic regions of the city, to gather input for programs we should be doing over the next 5 years. And it's actually pretty interesting, the diversity of the crowd you get. But what's also interesting is how little knowledge a lot of the people have of things we already do. Because they just assume they're not seeing it, therefore it's not happening. But we also got lots of great ideas of things we can look at over the next couple years. But I do believe that participation, when we start rolling out programs, people that were involved will be at a dinner table and say, hey, I went to that meeting. I heard somebody talk about that idea. So, there, you know, there's that involvement that helps as you sort of move forward with programs. People aren't like raising their hands and saying, hey, stop, stop. Why are you doing this? Because it was something that was rolled out in a public way, and the input was taken, and it wasn't just input and, you know, here I'm going to show you a bunch of PowerPoints and this is what we're going to do.
Right.
It was really a brainstorming session, blank piece of paper, tell us your ideas.
How did this start, this summit?
The summit started as a need here in Santa Fe. We believe we're a leader. We have some of the lowest per capita water use in the country. We're a growing city. We have.
What is the per capita usage per person?
We're at right at 90 for citywide.
That's low.
So that's all the hotels, everything. So it's a pretty low number, and it's continuing to go down. We're shooting for somewhere at 60.
Wow.
And that's what sort of, when you said, wow. So it's like that. You're not the only person that has said, wow, is, okay, so how do you get from
90 to 60? But you have a target. That's a good thing. You
to
need
60.
To have that.
So we have to start thinking. We have to think out of the box. What are other cities doing? What has worked? What hasn't worked? Why didn't it work? We're going to have a workshop on that tomorrow morning that's going to help us share ideas and come up with new ideas. Well, it's not only going to just help us, it's going to help our brethren down south, Albuquerque, the people up in Colorado. So they'll conserve water, we'll conserve water, and there'll be more water in the Rio Grande and the Colorado. And so that was really when we started thinking about, okay, getting from 90 to 60, how do we do this? What have other communities done? Let's get some people together and start, you know, doing a summit, not a conference, but a summit, which really has workshops and meetings and discussions of, okay, how do you do this? Bring some of the technology, new technology. Every year we sort of pick areas of technologies that we want to highlight. And this year, as you've seen, we have leak detection, and we'll have a couple more leak detection people here. So leak detection is a big one for us, because leaks are huge.
Right.
Water loss. So that's, and then you bring in the builders, and the architects have to be aware of it, because it's not going to be in the codes for a long time.
Right.
So the architects come in and see it, and they say, oh, that's a good idea. I can just design that into my system. And so, you know, trying to get in the policy people here, we've got people from our city council, we've got people from the state legislative.
So you have a senator coming.
Yeah, we have senator, we have our somebody that's running for the U.S. Senate. We also have our senior state senator giving a panel session on Friday. So we have great representation from the state here, as well as other southwestern states. But it really is sort of getting everybody sort of softened up, if you will. That's, I guess, the best way to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's because they see this, they see other people get excited about water. You know, it's just not some of this, you know, you turn on the tap. There are people here that are passionate about water.
Good.
And so it infects other people. And so they do things.
I know various cities, for example, Los Angeles, Beverly Hills, a lot of places in California and around the country, have teams signed a technology agreement with the country of Israel, or the state of Israel, which is the correct way to say it.
Yep.
Is that something that you guys have looked into or will look into or something? Because, again, they bring a lot of different technologies to.
You sort of hit a point with me.
Okay.
We were actually supposed to have a speaker this year
from
the state of Israel, and I was very, very excited about it. For some reason, it just fell out. We have no idea why. It's still what happened, and I'll sort of dig into it a little bit after the conference. Because, yeah, I totally agree. So I reached out, and I'm going to reach out again. I've already know some of the people I'm going to invite next year, because we do have a good relationship. We've got ongoing discussions. I just think this year we just sort of, for some reason, didn't get off on the right foot. So next year we will definitely have, we had two presentations on the schedule this year. which I was very excited about. One had to do with irrigating with poor, growing crops with poor quality water, which is very applicable to New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada.
Israel even has one where they build, they're doing crops with high salinity rates.
Right.
Still.
So that is an issue that clearly, you know, pertains to all of us here in the Southwest. So that was a topic that we had on our agenda and will probably be a topic that I'm going to look for a speaker again next year, because that is something they have far more experience in than we do here. And we've got to start, it's not just sort of us talking to people in California, it is us talking to people in other parts of the world.
Mm-hmm. Vertical farming, has that come to this area yet? Where you can take a room this size, pipe it up, and use LED lighting. I mean, they're doing that in certain places.
So it's a shame you're not going to be here on Friday. We actually have at the community college one of the best greenhouse growing labs in the country. The instructors there, one of the past lead of the community college is a friend of mine. He's now in Idaho, building a huge lettuce plant in Idaho, if you can believe it. So yeah, we actually do a lot of that. There's a tour of that facility on Friday at the community college. And so it is really a very, we do a lot of water control systems. We've got an algae production system down there at the community college. So it's a it's much more integrated down there. I partner and teach also at the community college quite a bit because of that. They are very much pushing the water. We've got over a dozen programs. Friday we'll have a career track all for water, and we'll have the universities, University of New Mexico, University Mining and Institute of Mining and Technology on Friday talking about graduate degrees, but the community college is going to talk about certification programs, rainwater, gray water, irrigation efficiency. They'll talk about the algae program, the greenhouse program. So that, you know, there's a lot of new water jobs.
Algae farming is really big. The government just started to give people availability to do those things. But you also get algae blooms and other things that we got issues with. Again, thank you for taking the time.
Well, thank you for coming to Santa Fe, and hopefully you're enjoying your time here in our wonderful city and also sharing your experiences.
Yep, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, all right, everybody. Some great insights there from Rob and Doug Pouchard. I've seen an algae production facility myself, so I know how intriguing it is. And a lot of stuff happening in that area, progressing, water conservation being a big issue and doing that, but fuels, foods, all kinds of stuff produced from that. So I'm going to take just an opportunity here while we've got our guest from Florida here to ask her, say, so I keep hearing about bugs in Florida being the size of your hand. Is that a fact?
It feels like it. There's huge bugs. There's little ones that you can barely see that'll give you a welt the size of your hand.
Wow.
And there's big ones that you can see coming. A lot of flies. They're huge.
Have you seen an alligator?
I have.
All right. Awesome. But you're in one piece here. I can see. So.
All 10 fingers and all 10 toes.
Yeah. So we're all right. All right, folks. Well, thanks to our guest, Rachel, and always every week to Chris Austin from Maven's Notebook. I'll encourage listeners again to tune into mavensnotebook.com for the latest in California water news. And to get more of the Water Zone, if you want to listen more, remember that we're not just here on KCEAA, but also on Instagram, Spotify, TuneIn, Spreaker, Pandora, YouTube, Podbean, Tiki Live, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and of course on TalkStream Live. So thanks to everybody and our guests. One more thing I do have to mention, though, on our cohort in broadcasting, which is Turf Side.